know where to look and where to listen. That was Jesse Wells with Horses. And now we've done 100 years of music on Cruisin' the Decades. Find all of our playlists at cruisinthedecades.com.
Over 100 years of music history. In the course of just 1 hour, you've been listening to Cruisin' the Decades with Brad Savage. This is the global edition produced for shortwave, FM, and AM stations worldwide on the leading independent community and music radio stations on the planet. This program originates at WAPS-FM, The Summit, in Akron, Ohio, USA. For correspondence or QSL, contact brad@thesummit.fm. Thank you for supporting independent, eclectic radio broadcasting and signals over the air from all corners of planet Earth. One broadcast to an audience of many, simultaneously. A shared listening experience. Radio and 100 years of music. Join us next time for the global edition of Cruisin' the Decades.
WRCT Pittsburgh, the last bastion of pulchritude.
Cobra, don't you know you're gonna shut them down? I took my Cobra down to the track, hitched to the back of my Cadillac. Everyone was there just waiting for me. There were plenty of stingrays and XKs. Don't you know you're gonna shut them down? When the flag went down, you could hear of a burn. The stingray had me going into the turn. I hung a big ship and I got into high. And when I flew by the stingray, I waved bye-bye. Cobra, don't you know you're gonna shut them down? Around the far turn in a straightaway, I was blowing off everything that got in my way. The stingrays and jags were so far behind, I took my Cobra out of gear and let it coast to the line. You know you're gonna shut 'em down. Shut 'em down. Shut 'em down. Shut 'em down.
gotta deny. Well, I'm a high ride surfer and I take three punches and a heavy to wipe me out. I can do a double spinner before you count to three.
Brad Keselowski, driver of the number two Discount Tire Ford Mustang. If there's one thing I've learned after years on the track, it's that having the right amount of pressure in your tires can make or break performance. Properly inflated tires are essential to the health of your car and to keep you driving safely. Check your tire pressure once a month, especially before road trips, or stop by your neighborhood tire retailer for help.
A message from the U.S. Tire Manufacturers Association.
Forbes Avenue is a production of WRCT Pittsburgh. The opinions expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of WRCT, its members, or Carnegie Mellon University. Email questions or comments to pa@wrct.org.
This is Forbes Avenue, WRCT Pittsburgh. I'm Aubriana Bench, and I'm here with Ben Carter.
Hi there.
Do you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, what you do?
I'm the scene shop supervisor in the School of Drama here at Carnegie Mellon, and also an instructor teaching a few classes.
How long have you been here for?
Just finishing my 35th year.
During my brief research into what you do, I saw that you are a CMU alum.
Yes, it's true. I graduated in 1984.
What made you decide to come back here?
They called me. I was originally a drama student for a year, and then I switched to sculpture and graduated from there. And went out and worked for 3 years, and then they called me out of the blue and asked me to come back and teach. So the rest is history.
I heard through the grapevine, because we know each other, that right. You have experience working on feature films.
Yes, it's true. Yes, that is correct.
I saw that it was like construction, special props, and consulting. How did you get introduced to doing this?
One of the things that the sculpture world teaches you is that there's no jobs in the sculpture world if you get a sculpture degree. But what it does teach you also is that there are businesses out there that use all the same technologies and techniques and materials and strange problem-solving strategies that dovetail very nicely into that. And the one business that I still had kind of a background interest in was entertainment, motion pictures, television, etc. And when I started here at CMU, that is what this department is. And then because of my woodworking experience, I immediately got a job on a movie building specialty stunt props for Night of the Living Dead, which was being shot here in Pittsburgh. And we had to do a custom railing for somebody to fall through. And that was a perfect segue from one discipline into the other. And from there, it was just, oh, you can do that? Oh, you've done that? Next thing you know, here we are many, many years later. So
that's really cool. How many films have you done since that?
20-some, but I stopped doing it about 10 years ago because it was too many other things going on. But it will consume your life completely. And I was doing it as a side job on top of my full-time job. And it's easily a full-time job on its own, especially if there's more than one movie in town, then you just don't sleep. So, yeah, I mean, I could go back over and count how many it is if somebody really needed an actual number, but it's over 20, so.
What was it like going from that experience and then coming back to CMU? Like, how are maybe like the people different in that field? And then
we are that field, the drama department. We train those people to go out into that business. So it's the same bunch of crazies that you deal with, and the same ridiculous deadlines, and the same budgets, the same lack of sleep, the same intensity of work, attention to detail. It's very, very, very rewarding and very, very fast-paced. And our department is very, very much the same way too. So our students are really, really pushed really, really hard to get the best out of them. And that is what the entertainment industry is very, very much based on, that mentality too. So they really expect people to just show up and give 100% or more all the time, every day until the show's over. And then everybody goes in their own way, and then somebody else comes in and starts it all. And that's just to get things done that fast and that accurately again and again and again, there's very, very little room for taking a breath or making any mistakes. So that's what we train.
Yeah, so it's just different place, but same exact type type of people, same vibe.
It's very, very similar. And the big, big difference is the movie business pays so much better.
What films did you do? Like, maybe what was one of your favorites that you worked on?
We've done bits and pieces on a lot of them, but one of the ones that we had the most work on was a film called Striking Distance. It was a Bruce Willis film that they shot here a while back in 1992. And that was just an entire summer of not all day, every day, because I was working here doing pre-college as well. There was just, we were doing special props on that movie, so they just needed various things like a huge pile of artificial rock cocaine. They needed a rubber shotgun that they could smack somebody with. It was shot on the rivers, so they had a police boat that they needed to have completely outfitted with all the electronics and lights and siren and all that stuff, so we did all that. They had a van that they just handed us, a blank van, and said, hey, turn this into a broadcast media van. So we had to put all the antennas and all the telescoping satellite dishes, which we all had to build everything from scratch, too.
Yeah.
So it's a really wide variety of stuff that they ask you to do, and you never know what you're going to get. And that's the nature of the business, too, is they have something in their mind, and they show you a napkin sketch, and they say, can you build this? And then they say, how much? And you kind of come up with an idea how you're going to build it, what it's going to be made out of. And very oftentimes, you haven't used these materials before, and you just have to sort of trust yourself and just throw yourself into it. And somehow or other, we were never late. They always loved it. I have no idea looking back on it how that ever happened, but it's so fun and it's so stressful. And it's really neat compared to the theater world, because you can always go back years later to this day. I can go on YouTube, pull up any one of those movies and any one of those segments and scroll through the segments of those movies and show anybody any of the props that we built, if it made it to the movie, because a lot of things you make, they end up on the cutting room floor. They get edited out for whatever time reasons or whatever. But anything that did make the movie, you can always go on there and say, scroll through it and say, yeah, there it is. There is Ben Affleck stabbing Matt Damon with this knife that you made. So it's really fun. And there's a history. It's documented. So that's what I like about it, compared to doing theater work where everything goes in the dumpster.
Yeah.
So.
You keep saying we. Is the we like you and other people at CMU, or did you work with a group?
When we were doing movie stuff, I was an independent contractor always.
Okay.
Pretty much. So I didn't join a union or anything. We just had our own shop at home. My wife and I were basically the company. She was a painter more. She'd do the custom painting work on things. And I would do all the structural, actual construction of everything. And then periodically, we did a movie called The Piano Lesson, an August Wilson movie for Hallmark Channel. And they needed a carved piano. And it all had to be carved from scratch. You know, they gave us drawings that they wanted it to match. And there was just too many hours involved carving it. So at that time, I was still connected with the wood shop where I used to work. And we did a lot of hand carving at the wood shop. So I called one of my friends there and hired him to come in and help me. He was a really good master wood carver. So we spent a lot of time together just carving all these wooden panels all over the piano. So depending on who you're working, what your project is, who you're working with, or who you're working for, you can tap back into your former or present lives and get different people with different skill sets to jump in on the project and then jump back out again. And if they're really busy and they don't want to do it, that could be a real problem. But usually you just show them a stack of money and they're like, oh yeah, I have time for that.
Olav, your son, told me that you have a piece of glass from The Silence of the Lambs.
It's a piece of Lexan, yeah.
Yeah. How did you do a lot of props for that?
No, I didn't even work on that. We were on another project at that time when that was being filmed here. But it was a piece of Hannibal Lecter's cage, the Lexan panels that somebody had made for the movie, because they don't generally go to the store and buy those things. Most of what you see is made, custom made for stuff like that. And when they tear down sets, a lot of it gets thrown away. A lot of it, if it's very interesting little pieces, people tend to hang on to as mementos of their experience, or if they think that maybe they can use it for something. Well, one of my good friends from back in the day, Lou Taylor, who was the construction coordinator on that movie, he took that with him, one of those panels. Who knows what happened to the other ones, but he took it with him and then brought it onto another movie that I was working called, a Stephen King movie called Dark Half, that was shot here. And they needed that panel as a backing panel in a shower door so they could slam against the shower door without breaking the shower door. And when that movie wrapped, he just happened to have it, said, I know how to do that. I have just a thing for that. We can shine light through it and you can't see it. And then when that movie wrapped, he didn't want that thing anymore. I was helping clean up. And I said, can I have it? And they said, get it out of here. So now that's in my basement. So you do tend to keep things that are kind of unusual and neat. I was going to make a dining table out of it, but I never did.
Okay. I wanted to know the story behind that because I'm just a big horror movie nerd. But I'm talking to Ben Carter, instructor at the theater department in CMU. And I just wanted to keep talking to you about what you were doing in the film scene here. You said that you would do stuff for props, like, in your backyard. Is that where you would mostly do stuff? Or
in our shop, in our home. We had at that point, when we first started doing it, we had bought a building down on the north side, an old salad dressing factory, and turned it into our house. So we had an apartment, we had a shop, we had a garage, and of course a music room, because, you know, you have to have a jammer. So, and the shop was a pretty good sized shop. So there was, you know, a metalworking area, a casting and mold making area, a carpentry area, a drafting area. And there was just because you have to use so many different types of technologies and tools and materials, coming back to the sculpture world, it's all those things all just came back together into an actual job that actually works, that actually makes money, that's objective. The sculpture world and art world is completely subjective, and the whole value of everything you do is completely up to the viewer or the art gallery owner or whatever, which is really, really kind of unknown, and you can't count on paying your bills that way. So yeah. All those same technologies and all those same materials and techniques and everything, they all translate directly into entertainment, where you need all that same stuff. And there it is, and it worked. And you can say for sure it's more like an engineering job, where you can say, yes, that actually fulfilled the project goals successfully, and here is your paycheck, moving on, instead of being just sort of surreal and weird, which is the art world. So
I just want to wrap up what we've talked about. Based on when you were involved in it, how was the Pittsburgh film scene in general? I know we've talked a lot about it. I know we've said it's kind of not very different from CMU because it's all the same people, but based on, you know, when you were there, how was it?
At CMU, you mean?
In the Pittsburgh film scene.
Well, it's been going on for 100 years. So, and it kind of comes and goes depending on a lot of different things, you know, tax incentives and things like that. And other cities are always trying to get the money and get the business to come here. And we'll go a year sometimes without something, and then sometimes we'll have three or four films being shot here at once. And right now, Mayor of Kingstown is shooting again. We just drove by the prison today, and there's a row of Haddad's trucks, which is, you know, the local people that support all the logistics of that. So they're still filming away again. I haven't committed my life to the industry, so I'm really sort of superficially involved in it. Like, I would just jump in and jump out as needed. I never ever once had to make a phone call and say, hey, does anybody have any work? It's more like I'd be doing something already and somebody would call. Or once people know what you do, they don't want to do job interviews and research. They want to call someone and say, hey, I'm in town. I don't know anybody who does this. And it's relatively small community in this town about in the movie industry, so everybody knows everybody. So if somebody says, who does special props, there's only a couple people that do it. Now, I don't do it anymore. Unfortunately, there's a couple other people around that took over that and do it on a really large scale. And we still stay in touch and can compare ideas and things now and then, too. But you can't really say it's a thriving industry. There was a point where it was a few years ago, probably 20 years ago, a lot of local carpenters quit their construction jobs and just joined the union and became full-time movie carpenters. And then that's not a good way to do it. You make lots of money for, 6 or 9 months or something like that, and then that movie wraps and they're gone, and then you don't know if another one's coming. Yet you've quit your jobs and you don't know what you're going to do, and then maybe you take on another construction job and another movie comes in. So sometimes they overlap too. So like you're really heavy deep into one and another one starts and they want you to come work for them, yet you're already signed on to this one, and they don't really care if one is already going. So the industry is just like that. And in Pittsburgh, where we're not really historically like LA or something, which is like known for being a movie town, outside of Pittsburgh, it's not as reliable as a source of income, for instance, if you want to dedicate your life and family and your bills to it. So doing it as a subcontractor occasionally was really, really fun and really nice. So it was. Yeah. It's too much now between, life and family and puppies and Airbnbs and things like that. No more.
Yeah. I'm talking with Ben Carter, a theater instructor at CMU. I want to talk a bit about what you do at CMU now.
Yeah.
Because if you can't hear, we're in the scene shop. Lots of background noise, people talking, movement around. And you have machines here that you can kind of do stuff with.
Yeah, the nature of a scene shop is kind of interesting, because what we do in the theater is we basically make a microcosm of the real world on stage. So it's all the same materials. It's all, plumbing and electrical and carpentry and metalworking and welding and machining and all the same things that you would have in the real world, except on a much smaller scale. So we have to do bits and pieces of all the things. So if you had to hire a plumber or an electrician or a carpenter to do your house, we have to do all those things in little bits and pieces, but they all have to be just as functional as they would be in your real house, but on stage. And then to support that, our shop has to have the same capabilities as if you were building an entire house, basically, all the same stuff. So we have tons of carpentry equipment. This whole side of the shop is basically for woodworking. That whole side of the shop is basically for metalworking. So we build more and more and more sets out of metals, mostly steel these days. And that all depends on the designer. We never know. So since we do things on a large scale, we like to buy machinery that's sort of scaled up for that we get from the industrial world, the manufacturing sector, basically. So our machines aren't what you would see like in a high school theater shop. They're pulled right from real industrial shops that are designed to run 24 hours a day.
Richard is pointing to the hamburger, like right above your
head.
Okay,
so the hamburger, it's a cheeseburger, actually. They're one of the classes they do here in the advanced paint class is they have to do a sculpture out of something three-dimensionally. And sometimes they're very large. You'll see like there's a mastodon head over there and a dinosaur head up there. They make them as part of their graduate thesis projects. And they're usually big and they're very fancy and they're super well made. And they graduate, and they can't take that on a plane. So sometimes they just dumpster them, and sometimes it's just like, no, we really want that. So up, it gets hung on the wall or hung on the ceiling, and then that hamburger and that car, that was actually a prop from a show. But they loved it so much they couldn't bear to scrap it, so they hung it on the wall. We only have so much wall space, so. But, like, the cheeseburger was just so funny, that we couldn't do anything with it. And at least twice, people have come to us and said, we heard you have a giant cheeseburger. And one was a hamburger shop that wanted to borrow it for their opening of their hamburger shop so that they could have it. And somebody else needed it for some show somewhere. So we bring in our lift and we bring it up to take down the cheeseburger. It goes in a crate and goes away. But that's the kind of thing, if it's that cool and it's that easy to hang on to, it's just fun. And it's just, the whole industry is kind of, it's so silly. You know, the whole theater industry and everything, it's all fake and it's all silly. And sometimes you get to hang on to really cool stuff like that.
Yeah. When my brother and I came in here to make a sign for the film we were working on last summer, you graciously let us use your CNC machine.
Yeah.
So do you want to maybe take me on a walk throughout the shop and maybe show us what your favorite machine
is? Sure, of course.
And
well, like I said, this is the woodworking area. We have the usual table saw and radial arm saw. So we have things for processing sheet goods like plywood and lumber. That's this whole side of the room. And that whole side of the room is the paint shop. So we build everything down here, and then we send it all down there one way or another. Sometimes it's too big, and sometimes we actually have to build it and then just ship it directly into the theater. Like this, this is all for Titanic. So,
so this staircase is going to be in the set for Titanic?
Yeah. And you see it's all bolted to the floor now so that they can run up and down on it and whatever. But you notice that it also really, really quickly comes apart so that we can take it in pieces. Sometimes we'll build a huge, huge set in here that can't come apart, and we'll put it all on wheels. And then we open that giant door. There's another giant door that goes onto the stage. And then we get 20 people just to roll the entire thing in there in one piece. So sometimes we do little tiny things. Sometimes we do things that are 50 feet long. That's the nature of this business. So we would rather not have this monstrosity in the middle of the shop, but that's what we do.
Yeah.
It has to go somewhere. It doesn't fit anywhere else. So over here, so that's, like I said, that's all plywood, soft materials relatively that we cut over here. And this is all for metal. This is a milling machine that we're currently set up. We have a computer-controlled aspect of this machine that we can put a piece of material in there and then do some programming, and it will do a bunch of processing to the piece of metal for you according to the program that you did. So right now we have it set up to do that as we were making some brackets for the lighting department to hang this lighting instruments on the front of the stage that don't exist. So they come to us and say, hey, we have this weird application for this stuff, and these things that we need, nobody makes. And that's kind of the nature of this business, is that people are always saying, we want you to fill this weird gap that nobody has ever filled before, and this is the materials and this is the needs you have to do for it. So can anybody make that?
Yeah.
So this is one of my classes, advanced fabrication class. They come to us and say, hey, can your class make these weird things? I say, oh, absolutely. So whatever the curriculum is for the day gets changed, and then we go off to make these weird things for them.
Yeah.
So we also use this for other things in class too. We just happen to be using it right now for that. I can show you an example of that over here.
Sure.
So there's also under there, there's a metal lathe. If we have to make custom round things, we do a lot of automation, a lot of computer generated automation and winches and things that move things around the stage. And we do a lot of adaptation of mechanical components. Like they'll bring us a sprocket or a gear or a shaft or a bearing, and they'll say, to make this work, we have to make this go with that, but that hole's too big or this is too small. And if we have to make a hole larger or a shaft smaller, we'll put it on the lathe and turn it down until it fits, what make all the components go together. So not your usual scene shop stuff, but we're not your usual scene shop too.
Yeah.
At the highest level of this industry, if you go out and look at the professional shops, who are doing, you know, the Broadway things and the touring rock and roll shows and things like that, they all have shops that are 10 times this size and way more sophisticated than this, as if it's actually a real manufacturing facility where they're making products. And they're making a product, it's just that product is usually used once or twice, or maybe on a tour or something like that, and then it's just shelved. So, but we have to do it with the same level of intensity and accuracy and tolerance and budgets and speed and all that. So it's a weird hybrid of worlds that collide. So we have metal cutting tools and metal drilling tools, another little miniature version of that milling machine, band saws for cutting metal, belt sanders for grinding metal, things like this iron worker machine, which does a whole bunch of different things. The machine I showed you there, I had to set up to drill holes. This is one of those brackets. So it drills all those holes, and then we bring it over here and put it in here, and it does all these bends.
Whoa.
We have it all preset to little certain marks, so you set it in there, you push the button, and it bends it up. If you want a sound bite, I'll give you an idea what it sounds like.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, I want to put it in there, I want to do a bend. This is an extra one. So. And this has been changed so that angle isn't correct right now. But I mean, that's a general, I mean, this is not a machine like so many other machines and materials that we have in the shop. Nothing has been at all, zero of this has been designed and engineered and built for the entertainment industry. It's all been taken from the manufacturing or construction or R&D or scientific community. One of those sectors, somebody has already made the machinery that we need, and we say, well, we have to make this thing. We need a machine to do that. We have to make enough of them that it's worth spending $80,000 for that machine. And when I started here, nobody had heard of any of this stuff because we were just building things with hammers and nails and screws and then throwing it away. And,
oh, boy.
You know, and that's not how it's done today.
Yeah.
So you have to do things fast and repeatedly, and that's where things like this thing, this CNC router, come in handy, because we have to do huge square foot areas of scenery. So like you see those carts there with all those pieces of wood on them?
Yeah, yeah.
They have a notch cut all the way around the outside of them, and then some slots cut through the middle of them. If we did that by hand, it would take days and days and days of just doing it with a hand router or a saw of some sort, whatever. Well, we can take one of those sheets, fasten it down onto this thing, and it takes about 5 minutes to cut each one, and they're all absolutely perfect.
Do you keep up with what goes on in the drama department these days? Like, do you know about the
show? As I need to. There's a lot of people who, you kind of learn when you stick your nose into situations. There's so much going on, and there's so many people that are so overloaded with work that, if you show an interest in something, next thing you know, even if it's a passing interest, next thing you know, you've got more responsibility than you wanted. And
yeah.
Something is your fault that you just asked a little question about. So I only know what comes through the shop, and I don't care what the designs are anymore. When it leaves this shop, I don't care what happens to it. Basically, I just teach people how to use the tools, what they're actually building or when they need them by and all that. That's out of my world now. So we just try to get them really prepared to go out in the real world and be really, really active, creative problem solvers, and know, most importantly, to look at a project, no matter what the scale is, and say, this is my skill set. This is what kind of tools we have at this shop. This is what our personnel can do. And can we do that? How long will it take us to do that? Do we need to job portions of this project out to other shops? And maybe it's too much at all. And then eventually, how much will it cost? How long will it take? So the whole idea of most of the students that come through our shop here they're really pushing them to be managers and business owners, project managers. So, and estimators and integrators and logistics people out in on a really large scale stuff. Very few people leave here after spending the money and go back, you know, to be their high school technical director or
yeah.
a regional theater person. Some of them do because that's what they want to do. But once you get exposed to a lot of really, really high-end, really cool stuff here, and you meet a lot of people who have come through here who are now really huge in the industry, and they're going to come back in and say, oh, you want to go work at your high school, do you? Okay, and then they'll say, check this out. Look what we did. Then they blow their minds, and they're like, yeah, actually, I want to do something really huge and really interesting.
I'm sure it's nice for you to just kind of, as you said, be in your own space. And you had your experience with the industry, but now
yeah.
you're just chilling here. But is there anything you want people to know that we haven't talked about?
As far as like what to, you know, parting comments or anything like that, if you go see plays or if you go see movies or if you go see television, if you have any interest in the industry at all, wonder what it, and the only reason I'm in this business is because I was I always wondered when I watched a movie, how did they do that? Who got to make that thing? That is so cool. And then at some point, the door opened.